How did you get here? Cage asked.
I took the last UTV, he said. But I think I'll let Charles drive me back up. We can talk on the way.
He glanced at Cage.
You and Mateo might want to show Anna some of the new babies. I hear that Arcali had a filly yesterday that everyone is over the moon about.
Charles waited at Joseph's unspoken request while Mateo and Cage took Anna off to look at the foals. When they were out of sight, Charles said,
Do you need me to carry you? Won't be the first time.
Joseph laughed.
That's for damn sure. There was that one week I was determined to drink every bar in the town dry.
I don't remember that, said Charles, gravely. But I was thinking about when that Mustang dumped you and you broke your leg 20 miles from anywhere. Horse made it back and your dad and I finally went out as wolves to find you. He ran back for help and I carried you halfway home before help came.
Really? Said Joseph, tentatively. You don't remember?
Someone asked me not to, said Charles, and I told him I would oblige him, so no, I don't remember.
Joseph nodded.
You know, I think I could make it back on the UTV, but I'm sure that if I did, I couldn't talk with you, and that's important. I'm too old for pride.
Charles picked him up with considerably less effort than he'd used to carry Joseph on that long-ago walk into town, because a frail old man weighs a lot less than a wiry cowboy. Charles wondered if the reason his dad did not associate much with humans was that they grew old and died. He did not enjoy the sorrow, but he would not have missed the years that he and Joseph were friends either. Such joy was worth a little sorrow. The lights were off in the big arena, and no one saw Joseph being carried out to the utility vehicle. The old man had pushed himself too far, even if the spirits had granted him strength. Muscles that had lain in bed for 3 months were not as able as they could be. He didn't say any of that, because Joseph knew it as well as Charles did. He put Joseph in the passenger seat and climbed into the utility vehicle beside him.
You're gonna have to tell me how to start this thing, he said.
You don't use ATVs or UTVs up in those mountains of yours? Joseph asked. I thought there was a lot of country too rough for trucks in Montana.
That's what horses are for, Charles told him.
And Joseph laughed, though Charles hadn't meant it to be funny. With the old man's help, he got the vehicle started and heading the right way.
Chelsea, said Joseph in a low voice. Was that because I wouldn't let you change me? My father thinks it is.
Chelsea was because of Chelsea, Charles told him. If she had not belonged to your family, I'd have done the same thing.
And because it was Joseph, he shared the full truth. Shameful as it was, consent was important. It ought to be necessary.
I'm glad I knew she was Cage's wife, that I could contact him to get permission. My wolf admired her toughness. There aren't many people who can face down a fey Jess.
I think that he would have insisted we change her no matter what Cage had said.
Joseph listened and said,
That's pretty messed up. But it will probably work out okay.
I hope so, Charles said.
Brother Wolf isn't gonna try that with me.
Joseph's voice was wary. Charles laughed, a small laugh that sounded like it could have been something else.
Brother Wolf is already mourning for you. He'd roll over and die for you. But he won't do something you'll hate him. Hate me for. You're safe.
They drove for a little while.
I like Chelsea, Joseph said, breaking the comfortable silence. She stands up to Hostine, when everyone else backs down. She is tough.
He paused.
I would not have chosen this for her, though. Death is a gift, Charles.
When you are ready to go, agreed Charles. But not when you have 3 young children who need you. Do you think she would have chosen death over being a werewolf?
Joseph didn't answer. It was a big question, and he liked to take his time with those.
He's softer than I remember him, Cage said as he drove Anna back to the house. Your husband, Charles. Dad would be so happy when he'd come visit, but he scared the pants off me. Mom would get this funny look and do her best to find some reason to go visit relatives. Sometimes she'd take me with her. He always looked at me like he was deciding how best to kill me.
Anna couldn't help but laugh. I've seen that look, she said. If it helps, I think it's his default when he's worried about something. Not usually murder.
Usually when he kills, his face is very quiet. It doesn't look like he's thinking at all. But he wasn't like that today, Cage said.
She made a neutral noise and then caught herself. She didn't talk about her husband to people, but he was right. Charles had been softer with him.
You know what his job is, right?
Cage nodded.
Rand's troubleshooter and assassin.
That's right, she said. It means that he can't care about anyone, you know, because that might be the guy who goes nuts and starts a bloodbath Charles has to finish. It was worse after the werewolves came out because it meant that little bit of gray area that allowed him not to kill every freaking body who didn't toe the line disappeared.
Cage stiffened.
Chelsea's not home free, she told him, but she's tough, and she controls herself, right? I've seen her kids. They've grown up with rules, tempered with love. That's a good place to start if you become a werewolf.
But he could be the one called to take care of her if something goes wrong, he said.
Probably not, she disagreed. That would be your grandfather.
Austin?
Cage swallowed.
He'd kill her just because.
She started to protest, then swallowed it. She didn't know Hostein. She couldn't offer reassurances about what Hostein might or might not do. They bumped along quietly for a little while, and then, when the lights of the house were visible, Anna said, Anyway, Charles is hard. He has to be. Justice and law, right? Because without those, he cannot function. He doesn't get close to people. Just his father, his brother, his foster sister, and me.
And Joseph. That makes you important to him.
He looked at her like he couldn't figure out why she'd told him that.
You can go to him for help, she said. That's why he made you get mad at him. So you'd know he was safe. Austin has issues with Chelsea. If you think things are getting out of hand, you call us, okay?
Charles isn't soft. He can't afford to be soft, but he is always just. She smiled.
And he's not afraid of Hostein.
Cage nodded.
Okay, I'll keep it in mind.
They pulled into the parking area next to the house. Cage walked back to the bedroom where his wife was, and Anna walked with him. Chelsea slept, curled up in the corner of the bed. They left the lights on because nothing short of a nuclear explosion was going to wake her up. Maggie was seated in a rocking chair, reading a book that she'd set down as soon as Cage appeared. Austin had a book, too, but his brooding unhappiness was strong enough that Anna's wolf took a decided interest. Maggie watched her son and then stood up.
Anna, she said, could I have a word with you?
Do you think I did the wrong thing, changing Chelsea instead of letting her die?
Charles asked again. They were coming up to the house, but Charles drove past the turnoff for the driveway.
Do I? Yes.
That was his friend, blunt to the point of rudeness, but only with Charles.
Does she?
Joseph made an ambiguous sound that might have been a sigh if he'd had more air.
I think that, in the heat of the moment, she would have fought for her life, any kind of life. I think if you asked her right now, she'd say she was grateful. What she will say in 5 years, or 10?
He shrugged.
Did you know she was a witch?
Charles asked. Joseph nodded.
She told me before she married my son. She wanted Maggie and me to understand what we were getting ourselves into. Black witches hunt down people like Chelsea. Untrained witches apparently can feed them a lot of power. She's pretty sure that her first husband was killed by a witch hunting her. She changed her name, bundled Max up, and moved from Michigan to Arizona. I told her that we already had werewolves. A witch would be a welcome change.
And Maggie?
Joseph said,
It was the worst argument we ever had, and I don't think either of us said a word about it.
He shrugged.
My father likes to argue, to use words. I think his way is better, but it is not Maggie's way. So we were silent for a while, and things went back to normal. Maggie likes her now.
But not Austin.
Joseph frowned fiercely.
He keeps the old ways alive, so he forgets what is true and what is false. He believes witches are evil because the Navajo stories of witches are all about evil witches. He still believes in the monsters in the stories his mother told him and her mother told her.
Navajo witchcraft is such that Navajo witches are evil. If they are not evil, then they are not witches, Charles said. And your father is right about the monsters. I've met a few of them. The worst monsters hide in plain sight.
Joseph frowned at him.
Monsters here?
I've seen skinwalkers who wear the skins of dead men so they look like the person they have killed. I have seen the Cold Woman.
Charles said. He'd forgotten how easy it was to talk to Joseph.
So have you. You remember that woman in that old bar in Wilcox, the persistent one who tried to get us both to come home with her?
Yes, Joseph admitted. You were pretty adamant that we had to wait for a friend we didn't have.
Two men went missing that night and were found dead in their car a few weeks later, a couple hundred miles away,
Charles said.
She was the Cold Woman,
he said.
How did you know?
I didn't know then. Just knew that she didn't smell human. She was gorgeous. In a room full of richer-looking, certainly better-looking men,
Joseph nudged him with an elbow.
She picks two dirty, tired cowboys. Felt like a trap. I figured out who she was after the bodies turned up. There were no wounds, just two dead men sitting in a car in the middle of a pleasant spring day, frozen all the way through. The coroner figured someone had murdered them in an ice locker or a commercial freezer, then staged the bodies.
The Cold Woman? Why didn't you tell me?
He asked.
By the time I'd figured it out, you'd met Maggie. The Cold Woman wasn't as important as other things.
I think I'm glad I didn't know,
Joseph said.
Too much knowledge can make you paranoid all the time,
Charles agreed.
It can also make you a target.
They came to the junction where the Sani Road met the highway. He turned the UTV around and headed back to the ranch house.
So, if my father is right about everything, Is Chelsea evil?
Hostine is not right about everything. Charles grinned at Joseph's ironic tones, and Chelsea is no more evil than you or I. He paused thoughtfully.
Then I am, anyway. I don't know about you.
More seriously, he said, there is a scent to black magic. I would smell it.
Good, Joseph said.
Then he said, in the same tone,
my wife will ask you to change her after I'm dead.
Charles had no time to prepare, no warning to brace himself, and he felt as though he'd been punched.
Maggie.
He had loved her once.
She was a fiery warrior, Maggie. Tough and smart and funny and unexpectedly tender.
If he closed his eyes, he could still see her. Her beautiful, bright eyes, wet and luminous. There were many things in his years on Earth that were faded by time. But not that night.
That night was clear as cut glass.
If you would have me, I would be yours,
Maggie said, moonlight softening her fierce young features into something more accessible. He knew how hard those words were from this proud woman who did not believe in making herself vulnerable for anyone. Her childhood had been hard and hadn't made it easy for her to trust. The night air was crisp, spring in the desert. The wooden boards of her porch were uneven under his feet. He could hear the wild-caught horses in the corrals moving idly a dozen yards from the little house. He could hear the soft sounds of Joseph's sleeping breath. Her roughened hands reached out slowly, and he did not back away. They touched his face, and he closed his eyes, allowing himself the comfort of her touch. To be touched with love was uncommon in his life, and he treasured it, absorbed it. She was beautiful, but that had nothing to do with why he loved her. He loved her for her refusal to give in to a world that twice judged her wrongly, first for the color of her skin and then for her sex. He loved her for the joy she took in the sun on her back and the horses she rode. He loved her for the laughter she found in danger and storms. And that was why he let it go this far, far enough that she risked her battered heart. And he'd done it knowing that he would break it. There was no name for the depth of hell he deserved for doing that to a woman he loved. He pulled back gently.
You don't know me, Maggie. If you knew what I am, you would not touch me.
But he knew her, and that knowledge gave him no hope to cling to, no excuse for letting her think that they might be more than what they were.
I know you, she said,
trying to hide her hurt. She couldn't hide from him, but he didn't let her know that. Her pride he would protect as well as he could. It was easier than protecting her poor heart. His poor heart.
We may have known each other for only 4 months,
she continued.
But those have been 4 months of 16, sometimes 18-hour days. I know you,
Charles Smith.
You don't even know my name, he thought in despair. And I don't dare give it to you.
He wanted to take what she offered, wanted to drown himself in her until he wasn't alone anymore.
I am not who you think I am,
he told her.
I'm a liar. I have lied because I could not bear for you to turn away from me.
If you tell me you're a murderer, she said stoutly, I'd say that whoever you killed deserved it. If you tell me you are a thief, I'd not believe it. Thieves don't work as hard as you do, and I should know. My dad was a thief and a murderer. He killed my mother as surely as if he'd shot her. I know evil Charles, and I know a good man when I see him.
His father's rules rang in his ears. No one must know what you are.
Charles had lived long enough, seen enough to know that his father was right. And still, she thought that he was a good man, when he wasn't a man at all.
You know a good man, do you?
He asked, feeling anger sweep up and make him lightheaded.
Do you?
Asked Brother Wolf, hurt and enraged that he would be the cause of such tragedy. Brother Wolf loved her too, but he knew that she could not love him, would not love him.
Then see me, Margaret. See me and tell me again that you love me.
In despair and anger, then, knowing what would happen, because even though she did not know him, he did know her, he did what he'd sworn he would not do. He let Brother Wolf's shape take him, glorying in the odd quirk of magic that let him shift swiftly, faster now because it had been so long since he'd allowed Brother Wolf to stand out in the real world. Maggie froze. For a moment there was no expression on her face at all, and then it went blank with fear. She screamed and stumbled away from him, falling to the ground and curling into a ball, not physical fear, but fear of what he was, what he might turn her into. The Navajo had more experience than most with the ugly side of magic. Joseph barreled out the front door and saw Maggie and Charles. He'd always been quick. He took in everything at a glance. Joseph, the son of a werewolf, knew what Charles was, had known what Charles was from the first. But Joseph was also the son of his mother, who had been so frightened when she found out what it was she had married that she'd left them and gone back to the reservation. Joseph understood the terror that had stricken Maggie silent, too. Joseph knelt and gathered Maggie into his arms and made soothing noises. She quieted, her head buried against his shoulder, so she couldn't see the wolf. Joseph looked up at Charles.
Give her some time, he counseled. Let her see that the wolf is still you.
If he'd listened, maybe his life would have been different, and so would Joseph's. But he hadn't listened. He'd left at a run, knowing that she'd be safe with Joseph. When he came back a year later, he had not been surprised to learn that Joseph and Maggie were married.
Did you ever think about what might have happened if you hadn't left that night?
Said Joseph. It didn't surprise him that Joseph understood what Charles had been thinking about. Dying left a man very close to the whole spirit of the world, and odd things made it through. As long as he didn't draw Joseph's attention to it, Joseph wouldn't even notice.
Yes, Charles said.
Joseph laughed.
You ever lie?
Not unless lives are on the line, he told his old friend.
Yeah. I remember a few of those times,
he agreed,
now that you mention them.
There was a natural pause.
The stories I've heard about you and Anna, they tell me that you've learned to fight for what you want.
Charles let that ride for a moment, trying to frame the truth.
I think I've learned what I wanted.
Maggie could never have loved Brother Wolf the way we needed her to, in a stupid way. I think that's why I wanted her so badly.
Man, that's twisted, said Joseph. You loved her because she only loved your human half.
He thought a moment.
Is that, like, sibling rivalry? Does that mean you have a menage a trois now, you old rogue, you?
Charles found himself smiling.
Maybe a quatre, don't you think? Anna has a wolf side, too.
Joseph fell asleep as Charles drove up to the house. He slept while Charles carried him up to the door. Maggie opened it before he needed to worry about how to get through it without waking Joseph up. She followed him silently up to Joseph's apartment and watched as he tucked Joseph in. The host of medical equipment had been pulled to the side of the room and stood like a grim, silent reminder that this chance to talk with his old friend was a finite thing.
You don't sleep in here?
He asked, because this room was all Joseph. He sent me away, Maggie told him. Right after the cancer came back, he told me I needed my sleep. She leaned against the wall and looked at Joseph. He probably meant it. But the pain makes sleep very hard for him to find. Mostly he dozes because he can't really sleep. I move in my sleep. I always have. He can't sleep with me in his bed. She pushed off the wall and walked to the bed.
You could sleep with him tonight, he told her. He's exhausted, and the pain shouldn't be too bad.
An effect of your magic? She asked. It's good that something could stop the pain. She looked at Charles. I know it's not permanent, but it is hard not to hate you for leaving him alone when you could have helped. He's been in so much pain.
He opened his mouth to tell her that it wasn't his magic, that he had no idea why the spirits had decided to relieve Joseph of his burden for a while, that they probably wouldn't have helped earlier. But he closed his mouth without speaking. She didn't need truth. She needed someone to be angry at, because anger was easier than pain. He could give her that. She sat down on the bed and turned her attention to Joseph, who slept like a child.
Silly old man, she said, brushing his hair with her hand. Think a little magic is going to turn back the years? So you can go out and break mustangs and women's hearts again?
It can, Charles thought, because he'd lied to Cage. He could pull Joseph through the change whether or not his old friend wanted him to. Chelsea had taught him how to do it. In his heart, he ached more for this man than he ever had for Maggie. And his heart had ached plenty for her.
What am I going to do with you? Maggie asked her husband. Joseph didn't answer her, and neither did Charles. Go away, she told him finally, her hand on Joseph's cheek, just as she had touched him once, a long time ago. He left, closing the door carefully, and pretended he didn't know she was crying.
Chapter 6. After putting Joseph to bed, Charles checked in with Anna, who was sitting in the rocking chair in Chelsea's room working on her current knitting project. Austin was in the room, too. Chelsea would need a dominant werewolf around for a while until they were certain she could control her wolf. The most dangerous time would be when she woke up after the first deep sleep.
Maggie needed to take a break, Anna said, looking up at him. She went up to check on Joseph.
She paused, but he thought it was because she'd done something wrong to her knitting while she was looking at him because she pulled out a few stitches before continuing.
She's up there now, he told Anna. He's sleeping. We tired him out.
I told her that he'd come down to the barn, Anna said. She wasn't pleased. We sent Cage away, though. Chelsea's been showing signs that she might be waking up. Have to get the fragile humans out of the room, just in case.
I told Anna that one person watching another sleep was plenty, said Hostein. Maybe you can persuade her?
I'm just fine, said Anna. I have to get this knitted before Christmas anyway.
It's February, said Hostein.
Yes, I know, his Anna deadpanned. I should have given myself a little more time. Now I have to speed up my knitting to compensate.
She didn't want to leave Hostein alone with Chelsea, thought Charles. He saw Maggie's touch in this, but Maggie knew Hostein better than Charles did. If she thought it would be good not to leave the Salt River Alpha alone with Chelsea, she was probably right.
I need to call Da anyway, Charles told Anna. You stay here and knit. I'll come back when I'm done.
He didn't tell her to be careful. His Da used her all the time to help wolves who were awaking from that first sleep. She knew the dangers, and she was better equipped even than Charles or Hostein to deal with any trouble.
He kissed Anna on the cheek and headed up to their rooms. His father needed to know how closely Charles had walked the line of the law they all lived by.
"You changed her without her consent," the Merrick said softly when Charles finished. "Without talking to me. And she's witchborn."
His da was just repeating what Charles had already told him, so he saw no reason to say anything more. He also knew it would annoy the Merrick, and decided it served him right for the implied chastisement. Da knew that Charles wouldn't change someone lightly. Silence played loudly between them, until he heard his father take a deep breath and release it. When he spoke, he sounded more willing to discuss the matter.
"You are certain she was bespelled by a fae?"
"Absolutely," Charles replied, and that was the real cause of his da's temper. When Bran spoke again, he didn't sound happy, but he wasn't playing the chastising alpha either.
"You got her husband's consent, which will appease the worst of the letter of the law crowd. Most of them are old enough to believe that a husband's word is good enough for his wife. I will give my retroactive permission. It was an emergency situation. The witchborn part can stay between us. It may not be against our law to change a witchborn, but it is frowned upon. There's no sense in making a nasty monster into a nastier one."
Charles listened for irony, but he didn't hear it. That didn't mean it wasn't there. Bran was witchborn, and he certainly considered himself a very nasty monster. So did Charles. He'd glimpsed what lurked inside his da, and if he never saw it again, it would be too soon. "She's not a black witch," Charles told his da, because that was important. "She hid her witch blood pretty well. I only got a faint scent until I tasted it in her blood. It might have been what attracted the fae's attention to her, though. Or she might have seen something that a human would have overlooked, and the fae tried to get rid of her."
"It sounds as though the fae was trying to get rid of her children."
Charles grunted.
"That's a fae thing, going after children.
But she was supposed to kill herself, too." His father sighed.
"I suppose you're going to go looking for the fae."
There was a long silence, because Charles seldom bothered answering stupid questions. His da swore, taking a good long time about it. That he used Welsh made it softer sounding, and might fool someone who didn't know him about just how frustrated he was. The drop into Welsh meant he was really unhappy.
"It took us a long time to hammer out that agreement," he complained, his voice a little bitter. "And it's been in place not even 6 months. My whole intent was to keep our people safe."
"It attacked children," Charles said. He wasn't pleading, not really, because whatever his da said, he was going after it.
"Mortal children," growled his father harshly. "Human."
When he heaved a big sigh, Charles knew he'd won. Even before his father spoke.
"The first trespass was theirs. They attacked the great-grandchildren of the Salt River Pack Alpha. You won't be breaking the treaty, because they already did. Maybe I can salvage something from this. Find out who it is, and stop them."
"By whatever means necessary," Charles clarified.
"This is a fae capable of making a woman kill her children," his da snapped. "Assuming that she didn't have a hidden desire to kill them?"
"No," said Charles. "Quite the opposite."
"Then this is a powerful fae. Mind control, forcing someone to act against their nature, and perform a specific task, especially a task repugnant to them, is rare. At least outside Underhill, it is rare. Leaving such an enemy alive is stupid. Find this one, and kill him if you can."
He snorted and his voice was full of self-directed amusement.
I'll deal with the Grey Lords. You go kill whatever is attacking children, and tell Hosteen that I authorized it,
he muttered.
Not that he'd wait for my approbation either.
The Marok ended the call. Charles loosened his shoulders to lessen the tension of Brother Wolf's eagerness.
I told you he would not object, he murmured. They would hunt, but it would take patience and care.
Hunting a fae was different from hunting a deer or elk, more challenging and more satisfying.
Then his phone rang. You couldn't tell she was witchborn until you tasted her blood? Asked his father. You can leave,
Hosteen told Anna. He'd been pacing for the better part of the 20 minutes that had passed since he'd driven Cage and Maggie out of the guest room, with a brief pause when Charles had come in. He stopped moving, possibly accidentally, between Anna and the bed where Chelsea lay in the coma-like sleep that marked the change from human to werewolf. He put his hands on his hips, stared at Anna, and waited for her to obey him. Alphas were used to people obeying them. Anna raised her eyebrow at him and continued to knit, rocking herself in a dark wooden rocking chair that was a lot more comfortable than it had looked when she sat down in it. Knitting was new for her. She'd started with quilting. She loved the feel and looks of the fabric. It was like making stained glass pictures with cloth, and it was an effective gateway drug. Weekly lessons with one of the people who kept the little craft store in Aspen Creek had led her into a whole world. She'd found knitting particularly useful because it let her wait without being restless.
I'm not going to hurt her,
Hosteen said, nodding toward the bed.
Okay,
Anna said, continuing to work on the sweater she was making for Charles. The last one had not turned out very well, and she was determined that this one would be better. It was red, his favorite color. She wasn't ready to try any kind of fancy pattern yet, but so far the sweater was looking like the picture in her how-to book, so she was encouraged. Except, that is, for those weird little holes that crept in here and there.
Go,
Hosteen said, with power. She gave him a chiding click of her tongue. Though it wasn't diplomatic, but she wasn't feeling very charitable toward him because he thought she was stupid. Anna could tell when someone was trying to lie with the truth. It didn't tingle her magic werewolf senses, but her plain old Bonnie language skills were plenty adequate. Sure, he wouldn't hurt Chelsea. Death can be painless. The idea that Hosteen would kill Chelsea would never have occurred to her. For one thing, murder was murder, even among werewolves, but Cage had been worried, and Maggie had been empathetic. Hosteen's actions since then weren't exactly subtle. She didn't know Chelsea, but she wasn't going to let anyone be murdered on her watch. Charles asked me to stay here, she said, rather than confronting Hosteen with his lie. You aren't my alpha, and even if you were, he can't make me do anything either. She tapped herself in the chest with one of her needles and half sang, Omega, me. Dropping into her own voice, she said, As an Omega wolf, I don't have the urge to obey you at all, not even the tiniest bit. Don't worry, it makes the Marok crazy too. There was another of those funny holes in the row of otherwise neat stitches she'd just finished.
What do you think I'm going to do to her? He asked. She's the mother of my great-grandchildren.
Anna met his eyes. Then why do you want to be alone with her so badly? He flinched from her gaze.
Two wolves aren't necessary, he said. I can keep her wolf in line, and you are, forgive me, not family.
I can help her keep herself in line, she told him, because I am an Omega wolf. She quit speaking, holding up her knitting again. There was another stupid hole. But that's not why I'm here. I'm here to protect her from you. He turned his back to her altogether. Anna wasn't sure why. Alphas she'd noticed had weird reactions to Omega Wolves. He could be ashamed, or he could be fighting off his temper.
"Witches are evil," he said, without turning around.
He was telling the truth as he knew it, mostly as Anna knew it as well.
"So I've noticed," she agreed.
He turned back to her, his surprise evident. Some idiot had been arguing that point, evidently. Anna hadn't been in the supernatural world long, but the scariest person she'd encountered, other than the Marok himself, had been a witch. "Most of them, anyway," she continued. "But you can tell when they've turned." She tapped her nose with the end of one of her needles and went back to work.
"All witches are evil," he told her.
She pursed her lips.
"A fructibus eorum cognoscetis eos."
"By their fruits shall you know them?"
He didn't have any trouble with her Latin. She must be getting better.
"She tried to kill her own children. That is her fruit."
"No," she said, patiently, though she didn't know exactly why she was arguing with him. Cage had been married to Chelsea long enough to have two children. If his own grandson hadn't changed Hostine's mind, she probably wasn't going to be able to. Her job was just to keep Chelsea safe. "You know that. She didn't kill her children, though she was under a strong fey compulsion. Charles thinks that it was her witch blood that let her resist. The fey don't break their spells with blood and spit. That's a witch thing. She bled herself nearly to death to keep from doing evil. That is, in my book, the very opposite of evil." After a moment of silence, Hostine came over to her and sat on his heels in front of the rocking chair, putting his head level with hers.
"You're doing it wrong."
She raised an eyebrow.
"The knitting,"
he told her, his face still serious. He indicated her beginning of a sweater for Charles with a jerk of his chin.
"You have holes. You've been letting your yarn get in front of your knitting. That's why you aren't getting a solid pattern."
Anna brought her knitting up where she could examine it, as if she hadn't already noticed the stupid holes, 7 of them scattered irregularly.
"You aren't paying attention to your yarn," he said. "We all do it once in a while. Pay so much attention to making things right that you make mistakes in the simple things. If the yarn is in front, between your needles while you're knitting, you're actually purling where you should be knitting. It leaves a hole. It's a legitimate stitch, actually. It's called a yarn over."
"Son of a gun," she said. "That's where those little suckers are coming from?"
He laughed, sounding tired.
"You know how to knit?"
Anna asked. She was going to have to unravel it down to the first few rows to get rid of them all. Hostine nodded.
"My mother taught me to weave. I enjoy it. Most of the rugs you see in this house are mine. But weaving takes a loom, and sometimes it is good to have something to do with your hands. So I learned to knit and crochet and cross-stitch."
"I thought that traditionally weaving was a woman's thing among the Navajo."
He snorted.
"Navajo men did what there was to do, just as Navajo women did."
Anna sighed, looked at the inches of sweater she'd managed, and then pulled on the loose yarn to unravel it. Hostine sighed, too, his sigh quieter than Anna's had been.
"You think," Anna said gently, "it might just be possible that you may have been paying so much attention to the duty that requires you to keep your pack and family safe that you might have made a little, very important misjudgment?" she asked.
Hostine said,
"In my experience, either witches are evil, or they have victims waiting until one of their kind notices them and comes hunting, at which time many people who cared about the White Witch die as well."
"Okay,"
Anna agreed, easily, watching the unraveling piece in her lap instead of looking at Hostine. She didn't want to make him uncomfortable now that he was actually talking to her, but she wasn't going to make a big thing about dropping her eyes for him either. No sense in letting him think that he was her boss.
"I mostly agree," she continued. "I know exactly 4 exceptions to that rule.
Charles, the Maroc, Samuel, and a witch I know in Seattle.
Bran and his sons don't count. If a witch has power enough to defend herself, she has sacrificed someone for it,
Austin said unequivocally. Sacrifice, yes, Anna conceded. But the witch I knew paid the price for her power herself rather than hurt anyone else. She isn't evil, and she is very powerful. It was discouraging how quickly the beginnings of a sweater turned into a loose pile of yarn. She took the ball and began winding, careful not to stretch the yarn out as she put it back on the ball. Why do you think the Maroc and his sons don't count?
They are werewolves, he said, taking her bait.
She learned to argue from her father, a very good lawyer.
Let them argue themselves into your court if you can manage it,
he told her.
They'll do a better job of convincing themselves than you ever could.
Anna looked up at the Salt River Alpha blandly. Then she looked at Chelsea, who was beginning to look younger. The crow's feet were fading from around her eyes, and her skin, formerly Arizona tan, was paler. She couldn't see any of the cuts Chelsea had made. Most of those had been on her body and were covered with a quilt. But if the lycanthropy was healing the marks of aging, Anna assumed it would have already healed the other marks, too. Anna didn't state the obvious.
Old werewolves, he snarled. Not new made.
Who were once young werewolves. Witchborn, she told him. And not evil.
Evil is going against the nature of things, the way things should be,
he told her with painful exactness.
Evil twists and turns and smells of blood and disease and death. I am evil too. I fight it every day, the evil inside me, but I fear that it has a hold on my heart. Tempts me to force my son so that I won't be alone. I fight it. But I don't know if she will. How can anyone fight two monsters in their heart and win?
He looked faintly surprised at his own words, but more dismayed that he told her so much. Anna had, well, not grown used to the peculiarity of having normally taciturn or repressed wolves suddenly spill their inner thoughts to her exactly, but she was no longer surprised. They talked to her of their pain or sorrow because their wolves knew that she was no threat. Looking at Hostine's dismay, she decided that in addition to quilting and knitting, she needed to learn something about counseling, too. If people were going to air their darkest sorrows to her, she ought to know how to help them. All she could do now was run with her instincts and gather the wisdom her 20-odd years on the planet had given her to counsel a man 5 times her age. We all carry within us the seeds of the child we were, she said slowly. The ideas and right and wrong and proper behavior. Charles will not speak the name of the dead if he can help it. For Charles, she fervently believed, that taboo was a good one. His ghosts were dangerous. The ways of the culture we were born into stay with us, even if we live as long as Bran or the Moor have. Some of those ideas are right and good, but others are modes of survival, outdated by the passing of time. Like the idea that men shouldn't weave or knit or wear pink and flowers unless it's on a Hawaiian shirt. The trouble seems to be sorting one from the other.
You think the monster I see in Chelsea is a remnant of some outmoded cultural leftover, he said neutrally.
Oh, no, Anna said, her voice so definite she almost winced. She continued more carefully. Most people carry a monster within. Not just werewolves or fae, most people. That monster has nothing to do with our wolf, except that the wolf makes it more dangerous. It's a monster born out of our own selfish desires and the wounds that life leaves on all of us. Whether those lives are a couple of decades or a couple of centuries long, living means that we get hurt. And some of those wounds don't heal, or they don't heal completely. She had her own monster, didn't she? Her own darkness that she tried to keep out of sight. A monster that would surprise her mate with its ferocity, born of helplessness that was made worse by the understanding that there had been help just waiting for her if she'd known how to reach for it. She hid that monster from everyone, because it would hurt Charles if he knew that she carried those scars still. But since she was admitting her weaknesses here, if only to herself, she also worried that it would interfere with his image of the person he thought she was. He thought she was brave and true and good, and she wasn't. Inside, she was dark and ferocious. If he truly understood that she had this twisted and broken part, maybe he could not love her. But this wasn't about her. Hosteen needed to see what she carried, so he'd understand he was not alone, and so he would not remember this conversation and feel humiliated because he told her so many things and she had not left herself as vulnerable to him. So she let that darkness fill her and looked him in the eye. He stepped back, involuntarily. She stopped it, swallowing her broken pieces until she had them tucked out of sight, where she kept them, unless she needed to draw on that rage and viciousness. "We all fight to be better than our base instincts, Hosteen," she told him, her voice a little rough.
"What happened?"
he asked. She saw the protective instinct that made his alpha kick in. It wasn't the response she'd expected. "Do you think that Charles would not have taken care of any problems I might have faced?" she asked. He nodded solemnly.
"Chicago. I heard that Charles killed Leo over his treatment of a newly changed wolf."
He paused.
"That's what he was talking about over dinner."
She was losing control of the conversation, time to put it back where it belonged. "Leo didn't fight his monster. It is not only witches who are tempted by darkness. When we werewolves fail to contain that monster, then it is up to our pack to make sure we don't hurt anyone. Up to our alpha, really. For Chelsea, that will be you." He nodded. His responsibility. Alphas, she had noticed, were very responsible people. That was it. That was the key. The reason he felt he had to take care of Chelsea, in the hitman sense of the phrase. "But we don't all fail, do we?" Anna said softly. "Too many of us, yes, but not all." She looked at the unconscious woman. "Brother Wolf doesn't think that she will fail. That's why Charles changed her. It was not impulse. It was inspiration that drove him. His inspiration is more accurate than most people's." Hosteen rose to his feet and looked down upon his daughter-in-law.
"She is strong-minded," he said,
then smiled a little.
"I've never had anyone argue with me by listening before. You must drive Bran wild. You listen and tug a little and listen and push a little, and in the end, you persuade me not to do
something you never wanted to do." Anna finished winding her yarn and began knitting again, paying special attention to which side of her knitting the yarn fell on. "My dad always says it's easier to convince someone of something they already want to believe."
"She saved Cage's children."
He reached out and touched Chelsea's cheek. She stirred under his touch and then quieted. He left his hand there. Anna tensed. She was too far away to stop him, assuming she could stop him, but she didn't think she'd have to. He bowed his head and then looked over his shoulder at Anna.
"You."
His voice broke, probably because the Merrock was talking to him too.
"Anna, get out of there. The Witchborn don't always make the transition from witch to wolf easily. If she was strong enough to hide herself from Charles's wolf, then she's strong enough to be dangerous, strong enough to hide if she is a dark witch. Charles is coming, but you and Hosteen, get out of there right now."
She couldn't respond to him. The Merrock couldn't hear her if she talked back to him. Hosteen looked at her.
"If roctibus eorum cognoscetis eos," he quoted back at her softly. How strongly do you believe that now? What do you think the Marok told Charles to do to her? What can he do that you and I could not?
Anna put her knitting down and walked over to the bed. Chelsea had been restless for the past half hour or so. Brand's message had spiked the adrenaline in both Anna and Hosteen, and that was enough. Chelsea's heartbeat was picking up. Anna could smell fear and helpless frustration in a growing wave. That first deep sleep often reset the newly rising werewolf's memories to the moments right before they were bitten. That was why it was such a dangerous moment. She took one more deep breath, just as magic, a lot of magic, flooded the room. Bran was right. Chelsea Sonny was not a weak witch, not at all. Chelsea sat up in one explosive movement, staring at Hosteen without recognition or sanity in her eyes. Panicked, she rose to a crouch, crying out involuntarily, a harsh, wolf-like sound. The magic, which had been strong, suddenly made it hard to breathe in the room, as if the magic had replaced the oxygen. Anna met Hosteen's eyes and then showed him what being an Omega really meant as she flooded the room with her own particular and peculiar power. Charles jumped rather than ran down the stairs, conscious of startling Cage when he landed beside Joseph's son at the foot of the stairs with more sound than he usually allowed himself. But just now Charles was more interested in speed than stealth. He threw open the door to the room where Hosteen had stashed Cage's wife and jumped back like a scalded cat almost before he felt the touch of Anna's magic.
"Hey, Charles,"
slurred Hosteen as though he were drunk. He was leaning against the wall on the far side of where Anna had dropped her knitting in a deep red tangle of yarn and needles.
"Come join the party."
Then Hosteen giggled. Anna gave Charles a helpless look, her back to the werewolf and the bed. Charles grinned at Anna through the open door, but he didn't approach